You were just beginning to tell me about the pots, fish pots.
The size of the pot.
That's right.
So we use the pots by yard of wire. Now some pots we made of 9 yards of wire. Some we made of 10. Some 12. 15 yards. 20 yards, 25 yards, up to 30 yards away, I make one pot. Now, reason is to dive. Now, the 30 yards made that one pot is nothing else besides cast jack, fish.
To catch jack.
Now, the jack swim more higher than most fish from the bottom. So the taller that pot is the more jack you catch. Now the lower pots, that's 9 yard pots. Now we catch most goldfish in that pot because those goldfish swim low down to the bottom. They feed low down to the bottom, so the lower pots catch most goldfish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we use 10 yards and 12 yards for the rock. Catch the rock stone fish, the fish that live in the rock hole.
Mm-hmm.
Now the rock hole fish have got certain times he came out from the rock and then you catch him.
Mm-hmm.
Another time you might not haul the pots from the rock. No fish at all.
Mm-hmm.
All of them lay still in their holes.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't came out at all. So perhaps maybe for a week or two, perhaps for a month, we meet hard fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And the count of the fish made themselves quiet and don't came out at all. So we haul the pots as it were for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Another time, on the rock, we catch plenty of fish.
Mm-hmm.
But we has the sea has to be in an awfully clear.
Mm-hmm.
Then, before we catch plenty of fish from the rock, every quality, big fish, small fish. But at that time, if we even on shore, we have to be frightful about the weather. And then, that weather, all the fish then will leave from the rocks and running all about, and then that takes the path and you catch plenty.
That is, when it's too calm, you don't get fish.
No, no.
When the sea gets stirred up, you get more.
Yes, but must be bad weather. It's not all stirred up that you catch fish.
Mm-hmm.
We have certain time of the year that we have salt weather. And that salt weather sends in salt sea. And we have lots of rumbling. And then the fish feel frightful down there. And then they run out of the holes and then takes the pots.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go back to haul the pots and they the pot still frightens us to see the amount of fish and the quality of fish that is in it.
Now, what size, what shape are these pots?
Well, I would have to really tell you and show you one of the pots that you might see the shape.
Well, are they just square or do they have points on them or what?
Square pots, to me?
Mm-hmm. You ever make square pots?
Well, yes, you can make some square as well as you can still give them length.
Mm-hmm.
You see, more than the length, more than what you give in the breadth.
I've seen some that were sort of zigzag shape, or like the letter
S. You mean with corners?
With corners.
Yes. Know. Yes, that's the way. All pots have got corners.
Mm-hmm. Where do you put in the entrance ways for the pots?
You mean fish going what in? We call the funnel.
That's it.
You see? No, the pots have got 4 corners. And in the midship of those corners, in the midship of the pots, then you set the funnel.
Mm-hmm. And the fish, you have to use some bait in those pots?
No, not all the time. It's only sometimes that you use bait.
Well, when you don't use bait, why do they go in?
Well, it just becomes a habit of moving, just like any other land animal that mischievous to anything.
They just swim along and the pot happens to be in the way and they go in.
Yes.
I see. When you do use bait, what kind do you use?
Well, you can use herrings, And another little fish we call sprat. And we catch other things from the pot that we take home and burn them and carry back.
Mm-hmm.
We call those eel.
Mm-hmm. Why do you burn them?
Well, because they would be stink. For the next day, they would be too stink to carry back. And the fish not taking the pot with them raw. It must be burned.
Well, now, do you think that the fish can smell?
Oh, yes.
They can smell
the fish? Yeah.
Is that so?
Yes. But one thing we learned that they can't hear.
Hmm. Well, now, people always tell you when you're fishing, don't make a noise when you're fishing in a boat. Don't make a noise, you scare the fish away.
Well, I don't know anything about that because I don't really believe a fish can hear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But with any just little thing, you see, they're scareful.
Well, when you
they can see very much. And can yes, nothing can see as much as a fish.
Mm-hmm.
And the simplest little thing
mm-hmm.
is scare the fish. But by hearing, I don't believe that. I don't think they can hear.
When you throw a stone in the water and they all swim away, then you think it's because of they see the stone coming.
Yes, it's the shadow of the water, just the shade, you see, of the water.
Mm-hmm. That's
they run,
mm-hmm.
but not the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't suppose that.
But now when you go with your pots to set them, you carry them out on the boat. You have to balance them on the boat?
Yes. We can take out 4 pots in our boat. A 20-foot boat can take out 3 pots. And a 27-foot boat can carry out up to 6 pots.
Mm-hmm. How do you mark the place where your pots are?
Well, we take the mark from the land.
But you don't put your pots out on the bank then?
We put the pots on the bank, and still we draw the marks of the pot, where the pot is from the land.
Is that so? I thought you said that the bank was sometimes 8 miles out.
Yes, we only judge it mileage. The mileage that way, didn't stand that way, but to find the pot by the mileage, you wouldn't find them at all.
No, of course not.
You see, so we have to use the landmark.
Well, some places on the North Shore, they use a little float, a wooden float.
Oh, we don't have to do that. We don't do that here at all.
Mm-hmm.
We has got mountings.
Mm-hmm.
One mountain yonder, one yonder. And the two mountain has got to correspond.
Mm-hmm.
You see? We has got 3 marks to find one path.
Yes.
We use 3 marks to find one path.
Mm-hmm.
You see? But the 3 marks has got to be corresponded.
Mm-hmm.
If anything faulty, is not where the pot at all.
Well, now, when you find the place for your pot, how do you get it up?
Well, you draw it. You draw it up.
With how do you catch on to it?
This way, you hold the scope of the pot and draw all the time.
Do you have a hook on the rope or something like that?
Not a hook. The rope tied on the pot down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the top of the water, we have buoys. We have one buoy, we call it a man buoy. Now that buoy keep the scope from the pot down there upright.
Mm-hmm.
So that the scope might have no slack. Because if the scope get any slack, it goes down in the rock. And the pot will cut off. The rock will cut off the pot, cut the rope and the pot will gone. Then we have another buoy, which we call that a main buoy. That's a floating buoy.
Mm-hmm.
At times the count will come and you don't see the main buoy. But you always have a chance to find the pot by the main buoy. Or it's a floating buoy.
Is your pot anchored some way?
Well, we have to say it is anchored.
Mm-hmm.
The pot anchored itself, anchored the buoy.
Mm-hmm.
The pot is what carries the weight and it balances itself down there. While the buoy is on top, so we have to say that the pot is what anchor the buoy.
Well,
the pot becomes the anchor.
You come up to your buoy then and you take hold of it and then the rope that's attached to it is what you use to pull your pot out.
Yes, you see you came up to the main buoy and taking that in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go up again until you came to the man buoy and you take up that and put it in the boat. Then you draw the pots now.
With that same rope that the man buoy was attached
to? Yes.
I see.
Said rope.
Now, if you have very rough weather, I suppose that rope gets all tangled up and fouled on things.
Or no.
Cut or something else.
No. It's only recently that the boat, the rope of time chafed, according to current. Not the bad weather caused it, but we have, the sea has got current in it. The current turns in all different ways. And in the shifting of the current, the rope may have a kink. Mm-hmm. Well, you're liable to lose the path by the kink because it's liable to cut. Mm-hmm. As well as you, it will kink up there until when we go back. And when we go back and find that kink, we simply made a jam. We turned the rope down and made one jam. And we tied up that kink.
Yes.
You so see? And it's still set back. It's still set back the path, and that kink won't be any detriment to the width of the path again.
Mm-hmm. Your man buoys don't actually come up to the surface then?
Yes.
They do.
We keep that buoy upright all the time. Mm-hmm. A part of it down in the water while the part standing up. Mm-hmm. You can stay any distance and saw that buoy standing.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't necessarily come up to the surface of the water.
Yes, it's necessary. And chiefly in these days, we have to be very careful with it. Because in these days we have got steamers that cut off the parts of them all the time.
Oh.
And when you keep that man buoy upright like that, if you take off the main buoy, you're liable to find the part by the man buoy.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
I see.
And that's the greatest loss is that we have got no concern fishing. Steamers cutting off the parts of them.
Mm.
Oh, mercy. You just set it. Part may cost you 3 pounds. And you set it this day. And the next day when you go back, it's gone. The steamer walk along the said course and wipe it right off. But gone.
And I suppose they might do it at night and not even know they're doing it.
Oh, they do it any time. Night and day, they do it. And see, for wicked men travel on the bank. Mm-hmm. And then they cut off plenty all the time.
You fish then with pots, and then you fish with lines too?
Yes.
What kind of fish do you get with the lines?
Well, I will tell you how that fish thing goes. Now, when we haul the pots and catch small fish in the pot, now we quickly take out one of the live fish and stick it on the hook, throw it back overboard, and that live fish will swim past to get back to bottom, and then the big fish from yonder will see that fish coming, and then he drive at that little fish.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And the hook will take turn now of the big fish.
Mm-hmm.
Then you want him have that bottle again until you kill it.
So as soon as you pull up your pots and get your fish out of that, then you start right in with your line fishing.
Yes, all the time. And same as you're hauling the pots, you're working your line just the same.
Mm-hmm.
To every pot, you can send bait down.
Mm-hmm. I don't suppose you do anything with rods and reels.
No, we don't use that. We don't use that. We use up our hand lines. You see?
How big a fish can you catch with a hand line?
Well, you can catch them weight up to 200,
is that
300.
So? How do you land a fish like that?
Oh, we have what we call a Bowden hook. A hook that made into a stick. And when we brought that fish to the side of the boat, we strike it, that hook in him. And then I with the line, the wire in the mouth, lifting, and the other man with the what we call the boat and hook to lift the other part, and then the other man lifts the boat and roll him in.
Mm-hmm. But I was really thinking, how do you get him up to the boat in the first place? As heavy a fish as that, wouldn't it be very difficult to hold the line? It would burn your hands and so on.
Well, at times the line will burn you, but it's not so bad.
You get used to it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Do you do any fishing with nets?
Oh, yes. Now the net, we speak about net, we have what we call seine. And then we have another small trammel which we call net. Now, the net, we catch some fishes in that, we call them sprats. And we can catch other fishes in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the seine is what you use to draw big fish ashore.
To draw them ashore?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The seine, is that the thing with the floats on a rope, and then it...
Yes, it contains a lot of corks, mm-hmm. which float the top of the seine. and it used ballast with the bottom of the seine so as to keep down the seine down to the bottom. If you don't use that ballast down there, the fish would swim underneath and came out.
Yes.
But you keep that, you have got irons in it to keep the bottom down, that the fish cannot find no way to swim out.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, you use cork with the top of the seine so as to keep the top floating. And when the fish swim up, he can't find no way to get out again because the top of the seine is above.
Mm-hmm.
It's above him.
Mm-hmm.
You see. So both the bottom and the top have to be equally
mm-hmm.
to keep the fish in.
Yes.
Then now you contain a rope at each end of the seine. A large rope. Rope can be 200 fathoms, up to 300 fathoms each rope. And then you use 6 or 7 men and one rope drawing, and 6 or 7 and the other rope drawing. And both rope drawing in, then the both side of the people working. This side working down and the other side working up.
And coming toward each other.
Yes. And then they come up and they say, when they say pretty near shore, they shut up. And then the fish came into a bag.
Yes.
And then they draw it ashore.
What kind of fish do you catch that way?
Well, you catch plenty of fish. Plenty of different sort of fish.
Mm-hmm.
You catch kingfish, kovali fish, kovali jack fish,
mm-hmm.
and snook fish. All sort of different sort of fish.
I thought I saw them catching some mullet that way out.
Yes,
of
the... you catch mullets.
Mm-hmm.
Tarpan.
Mm-hmm.
You know the name of, you know those fish?
Yes. Is that the same as trapong?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what they call them on the north side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You ever have any dangerous experiences with fish?
You mean the fish that will damage you?
Yes.
Oh, yes. You want the name of those fish?
Well, then tell me anything that ever happened to you.
Well, we have some fish we call eel, conger eel.
Mm-hmm.
You see? They are very cross fish. And when we shake them out of our pots and they drop in the boat, we have got to be very careful. Otherwise, they grab you.
They bite?
Yes.
Are they poisonous?
Poisonous.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another sort, we call them Juna.
Juna?
Yes.
I haven't heard of that one.
Well, Mr. Juna is a man about the breadth of the hand. And he contain a tail. And the tail, he have a large prickle. And now he using that prickle all the time. See, and any time he drive you, or you cramp up.
Oh,
he's very poisonous.
Yeah. Is that the same thing as poison grouper?
No, that's another one.
Oh.
A poison grouper, that's another one again with his bones standing up, and any time he touch you, you have the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Not him holler, but you got the ball.
Mm.
I mean, so dangerous pain.
Mm-hmm.
The moment he touch you. Then you have another one we call ripley. That's
yes.
A large one. It's a large fish. A ripley can cover the whole breadth of this place.
You mean they weigh hundreds of pounds?
Yes. Now he contains a large, a long tail. And he'll drive that tail at any distance and strike you with a long prickle on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if he strike that in you, it's only a chance that the doctor can help you,
mm-hmm.
saving your life.
Is that fish good for anything?
Eat. It's eatable.
Yes, I see.
Men eat it.
What about sharks?
Yeah, shark is very dangerous, but that's if you get overboard or to sea, a shark liable to destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
But in the boat, really, is not so dangerous.
What about barracuda?
Well, a barracuda, we catch him on our line, but we have to be very careful with him because he's a dangerous fish.
Mm-hmm.
You see, he's poisonous and he's cross too.
Mm.
And if you hold him, cut off the whole of your limbs.
Mm.
I have large teeth.
Well, which one do you think is the most dangerous?
Well, we have to say the barracuda is mostly one of the dangerous fish that we have to handle. Now we handle shark, but still it is not so dangerous as the barracuda.
You see,
up to when the barracuda came in the boat, it will still damage you and kill you, can poison you. Anytime it caught you in the lab, it will poison you right away and kill you. You see. But we keep ourselves so clear from the shark and know how to handle him. We can't, as it were, kill him overboard.
Yes.
Before we roll him in the boat.
Roll him in.
You see. So the barracuda is still more dangerous to us.
Is the shark good for anything?
Yes, he's still eatable. To those people, to some people who will eat him. Now we fishermen don't eat him. Still we sell him.
You do.
And other people eat him.
The shark skin, is that good for anything?
Yes. They use that for leather. Well, nail shoes. And do other things else.
Well, now, I think I've asked you about all the questions I can think of. Am I leaving anything out?
As far as I can remember, you asked me all the questions about the sea.
I haven't asked you much about the weather. That's one thing I haven't asked.
You mean the weather at sea?
Yes. And where the wind, where your weather comes from.
You mean the best weather that we can go to sea in?
That, for example. Bad weather, too.
Well, the worst weather that we has got is the wind from the north. That wind will drive us to sea.
Oh.
And it is very dangerous. You see,
hard
you can't do what times.
Yes.
You can't get back to the land.
Mm-hmm.
That wind, according to what power it's blowing,
mm-hmm.
it keeps you back to sea all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And bad weather again, that will kill you clear at the shore side. That's northwest weather. And the wind strike from there, it rides the sea ashore. And when we came ashore, we can't get in.
Mm-hmm.
The tempest is so...
Waves are too high.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you do in a case like that?
Well, we have to take chance. See? We run a risk to get ashore. It very happens that your boat turn over and liable to be mashed up, as well as times you might get killed too.
And lose all your catch of fish
and
too.
And all, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as the boat is capsized, everything is all gone.
Yes.
You see? So it is very dangerous. That wind... From the northwest.
From the northwest. So you wait until you have better weather before.
When we have that wind, we don't go to sea at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's liable at times that it catches us out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the wind travels faster than what we think.
Mm-hmm.
You see.
You have to watch out for it.
Yeah. Now the best weather that we have at sea, the best wind, is southeast wind. It's a wind blow from here.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and they help us all the time back to the land. By jolly.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Well, thank you very much for this. This gives me a wonderful idea of how you fish and what you fish for and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
What is your name?
Pearl Buchanan.
And where do you live?
Frenchman District.
In, what parish?
St. Elizabeth.
Is that your home? You've always lived there?
Yes.
All right. Well, now, St. Elizabeth is famous for cassava.
Yes.
Can you tell me how you grow cassava and what things you make out of it?
Yes. Well, first of all, you have to cut the ground for it and beat up the grass. And then you prepare the cassava stick. And then you have to chop them in little long part like that, and then you...
About how long? How many inches?
About that, sir.
About 10 inches or so?
Mm-hmm. About that. And after that, then you have a hoe, and then you dig a hole about that wide, and then you have to plant the cassava now by the eyes, turn up the eyes then. That's how...
Now, can you tell me that? You said you use a stick for the cassava.
Yeah.
Is that the piece that you stick in the ground?
Yes.
And that has eyes on it?
Yeah.
Oh.
It has little eyes that where the leaf come from then. Those leaf sheds off, and then the eye is right underneath the leaves.
I see.
And then after you put it in the earth, about a week or so, a week and a half, mm-hmm. I start to grow out, mm-hmm. come up in fat little clones.
Mm-hmm.
And then after they come about that height now, you start to mold them out. Mold them.
About 2 feet high?
Mm-hmm, about that. Mm-hmm. You mold them, weed them out.
What does molding them mean?
I mean, just weed around them and stir the earth around them.
I see.
And cover them thick up. And after that now, you wait on them for 1 year before you pull them.
Is that so? I didn't realize they took that long.
Sometimes they wait until 1 year and 6 months before they start to pull them up.
Is that so?
Yeah. And then after that now, you pull them and you carry them home. And you scrape off the black skin off them.
It's the root that you pull out?
Yes, you pull the root now.
Does the root grow in fingers?
Yes, they grow all 20 roots sometime on one stick that you put down in the ground.
I see. And then you dig out those roots?
You
and
pull it up.
You pull them out?
Yes.
You have to break them off?
Break them off, or else chop them off with a machete.
I see.
And then after that, now you take them home.
Mm-hmm.
And then you scrape them with a knife. And then after that, now you grate them on a grater with a long piece of board. And then you bend down over it. And then grater them.
Grater on the board.
Yes.
You mean you have a piece of gratering tin on
yes,
the board?
Yes.
And
you punch it. You punch that grater with a nail.
I see.
And then it comes coarse. I mean,
mm-hmm.
some people do it coarse and then some fine.
Mm-hmm.
All the fineness of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you put it into a bag, they call a cassava bag.
This made out of cassava.
Touch. Yes, the greater one now.
Mm-hmm.
Made out of silver touch. They plot it. And then you put it into a press with big woods put on top. Then you put in 2 poles and then you lay the big wood on top. And then you make it stay there now and then it dry.
Well, now what makes the pressing? The board goes on top of the bag?
Yeah.
And then you put something on top of the board to weight it down?
Yeah. You put 2 long poles. And then after you put that pole on, push it into something about that, so then you put up your weights now to press out the water.
I see. The weights on the end of the pole?
Yeah.
I see.
And after it dry now, then you knock it out. You beat it in a mortar with a mortar stick. Pump that.
Mm-hmm. What's the mortar made of?
Lignum vitae.
Of lignum vitae?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have a big iron, a big broad iron, so.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put it on the iron. And you spread it out on it. With a round thing you put on it, they call it a hoop, to make the bami nice and pretty round and round.
I see. You know, what you're describing now is how you make a bami.
Yes, sir.
You take this moist cassava,
yeah.
It's all grated up,
yes,
and
sir.
You put it on a
baking iron.
Baking iron.
Yes, sir.
And you fill it inside this ring,
yes,
so that it will come round.
Yes, sir.
I see.
Then after you put it on, now when the iron hot, now you just take time and lift off the hoop, we call it. And then you have a piece of board, no, a pot stick, we call it then. And then we clap him with it, that tape.
Make
and then
clap.
Turn him over. And then you take him off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to eat.
Does the bami have to be actually toasted?
No. When it's fresh, it's very nice.
Mm-hmm. I don't mean that. I mean, when you're making it, do you
yeah.
have to, it's on this iron.
Yeah.
And the purpose of that is to dry it out a little bit?
Yeah, to let it come together.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's powdery when it dries.
And
you put it on the iron now to bring it all together now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And does it remain white?
Yes,
It does. It doesn't get toasted like the way bread turns brown on you.
No, but if the iron is too hot.
I see.
Yeah.
You have to be careful about that.
Yeah, sometimes you have to dry the fire.
if your bami is going to be pretty, it has to be as white as snow.
No, sir. Just start to brown.
Just start to brown.
Yeah.
I see. Well, now, what else do you make besides bamis?
Well, we make starch. The starch close it. And we do the cassava and cut them up in little pieces and then soak them in water and put them out to dry. And after they dry now, we beat them again in the mortar and sieve them. And that, after we get that powder now, we call it a masa. Masa.
Masa.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we take it now and buy flour with it, put flour with it and make dumpling.
Uh-huh.
And it's very nice.
You have a special name for those dumplings?
Masa dumpling.
I see.
And then sometime again when we do the cassava, when we grate it, we always get a piece of cloth now, and then we wash out the starch from the cassava. And that head now we throw away. Feed fowls or hog and
the
dogs.
The head means what? The part that you don't...
That don't have the starch in it again.
Oh.
We wash the starch out, that one. And then we keep that now for the fowls and the pigs and the dogs. And then we use the starch now to make tapioca, bake. So bake the starch now on the iron, and then we dry it on the zinc. And then we take it make porridge, tapioca porridge.
Tapioca porridge?
Yes.
Well, now, how do you make the little thin wafers?
Well, really, I didn't do them. I never do those.
You don't know how they do them?
No, sir.
They must be difficult to make.
I suppose I just do them on the iron, just sprinkle it on the iron all the same, and then they stay there, and then they fold them and crisp them.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. When you're pressing the cassava, you press out the water.
Yeah.
Is that water good for anything?
No, sir, it will poison.
Oh, it's poison?
Yeah.
Even from the sweet cassava?
Yes.
Or do you do this with bitter cassava?
We do it with bitter cassava, sir.
I
think the sweet one will poison any animal, too.
It will?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They don't live more on... when you find it out, it has to be quick to give them some remedy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, then you really want to throw that water away.
It has to... Try to be careful that it don't settle on anything, drink it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then after you make your cassava and you make the starch you use for clothes.
Yes.
And you also make tapioca with it. How long will it last? Is it something that will last?
It lasts for years.
It will?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whilst it's done in the proper way. Has to get it dry good.
Mm-hmm.
Dry. In the sun then.
Mm-hmm.
After you bake it on the baking iron, you put it in the sun to dry.
Mm-hmm.
And then dry it for days and days and keep drying it every day. Then you put it in the sun to heat them up. And then you put them away.
Now I come back again to the cassava plant.
Yeah.
After you've taken out your cassava roots,
yeah.
Is that little stick that's left there, the plant, is it good for anything?
Yes, you make a big bundle then and you dig the earth and transplant them in the earth. Until when you need to plant again, then you use those same
That's
stick.
That's where you get your stick to plant?
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
Can you keep on planting cassavas in the same ground year after year?
Yes, year after year.
It doesn't wear the ground out?
No, sir. And sometimes, same as you pull it out, you just chop it and jam it back in the earth. And stay there and come right back up again.
Come right back up?
Yes,
well,
then,
very convenient.
And then you get more bummy again soon after.
I suppose the cassava doesn't require very much water.
Yes, it has to have plenty of rain.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, how can you grow them on Pedro Plain then?
Well, sometimes it's bad that now we're very short of cassava here.
Mm.
We have to be buying from the Lord down Lakovia and Magati and far and dear then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm afraid I'll have to stop. I can't think of anything else to ask you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Right, sir.
Tell me what kinds of dishes you can cook with cassava or tapioca or any of those things.
Well, really, I just made the one, the same tapioca pudding.
How do you do it?
Well, we soak it in milk, and then you add the sugar and egg and a little butter, and then you bring it to a boil on the stove, and then after that you put it in the oven and bake it.
And bake it?
Yeah.
Are there any other things you can do with the tapioca?
Just make porridge.
Just porridge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People like it a lot. They eat a great deal of it around here.
Yeah.
Well, I must say I like a good banny.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Right, sir.